Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. This month of October, misnumbered as the 10th month of the year by the summer insertion of the first two Caesars, octo is 8 in Latinese, is the ecclesiastical month of creation, claimed as the biblical birth of earth and of Adam and Eve, who because of a snake and an apple were banned from Eden and forfeited eternal life for all humanity. Our immediate contemporary serpent is a virulent virus that has fouled our very breath and seconds unto death many multitudes of Adams and Eves, with no end yet in sight. The serpent that threatens human existence with a sixth extinction of earthly life, however, is humanity itself. I follow up this assertion with a short, biased, and skewed chronicle of human devolution that I wrote, and I named it Homo Evolvianus. I start with an epigram. The mediator between heads and hands must be the heart. And that's from Thea von Hubble and Fritz Lang, the movie Metropolis, 1927. Humanity's sly calculation of time might not fit any other world than its own, and even so is a compromise between observation and superstition. This early year of the third millennium of a parochial calendar might be an opportunity to reassess a few perceptions of human reign over our very small, crowded planet. One of the larger misconceptions of our era is that early civilizations and the people who lived in them are archaic and beyond any relevance. We consider them the old, decayed, even decadent times, vanished into the fog of history and myth. But those were not the old times. They were actually the young times. Earth is getting older. Our species is aging. Our civilization approaches Alzheimer's. Our ancient ancestors were not the wintry grayheads we regard them as. They are instead the vigorous youth of Homo sapiens, ecstatic, reckless children, wildly avaricious and ruthlessly violent. We ought to think of them without condescension as the youthful nursery of our species. We too often scorn our ancestors as naive and aboriginal, and we condescendingly regard their epochs as simpler periods compared to our neoteric generation's modernity, post-modernity actually, and self-styled sophistication from ancient sophist or cleverly hypocritical. We forget what they learned for us, nearly everything we know. We are what they bequeathed us, an inseparable thread of maturation as well as deterioration. Humanity has recently punched its own chronometer and shifted centuries and millennia. We are two decades into the 21st century, Anno Domini. Yet the millions of years humanoids have been on Earth are hardly reflected in the two millennia our age records. Civilization is at least 10,000 years old. Homo sapiens, our current evolution, is perhaps 200,000 years or more. 5,000 years of written record, the rest unrecorded and unknown, except for a scattering of broken skulls and bone fragments, shards of chipped rock and primeval cave paintings and engravings on rocks. The millennium humanity now penetrates might be more realistically dated back 70 years to the middle of the 20th century, to the summer of 1945 on the aptly named Day of Trinity, when the first humanly inspired nuclear explosion converted a section of desert into glass. Unlike the bicameral Christian calendar that contrives a parochially xenophobic split to history, each half falling away from the other, the fissure of atomic energy is the true historical partition. Perhaps the 21st century might rectify the calendar and realistically age itself half a century in the process, beginning when humanity cracked the atom. It was also the instant human beings realized this cosmic power they unleashed from its locks might be their doom. It was one of those rare moments that seemed as if everything before that single moment was inexorably directed toward it, and afterward will be measured from it until some other great cosmic mystery overwhelms our perceptions. At that point, history could have been reconstructed. The mushroom cloud was the end of the old calendar, but might finally be recognized as an entirely new epoch, a century or more up the line, as was the Christian calendar first collated centuries after its acclaimed miracle. A paradox that underlies history is that the eras of greatest creativity and discovery are also the most dangerous. Human culture has consequently structured technologies that are disintegrating civilization, even as civilized life owes its existence to them. Humanity's rise through complex genetic spiderwebs of primates and hominids, developing wit and organizational skills during the 98% of its span that has been spent hunting as a clever and rapacious carnivore, its subsequent civilizations based on agriculture, commerce, and warfare, seems barely a breath in the life of Earth, yet its short reign has metamorphosed most of the above sea level world to its own taste and style. Man is born, suffers, and dies, is the legendary crystallization of Egypt's long ancient history, and might elliptically be the essential story of humanity. The German Count Gottlieb von Hassler enlarged the thought toward the end of the 19th century when he said, unconsciously anticipating the world wars of the 20th century, "It is necessary that our civilization build its temple on mountains of corpses, on an ocean of tears, and on the death cries of men without numbers." Quote, unquote. The most significant fact of human history is its mountains of corpses, laid out at civilization's temple as the purpose or outcome of its greatest scientific and technological creations. At the very heart of the temple are the death camps of World War II, whose names will most likely cause a shudder up through the centuries. Simultaneously, the purpose of splitting the atom to obliterate large numbers of the human species might cause future humanity to regard its ancestors at least as barbarously as we think our cave-dwelling forebears. The human race has brilliantly invented its own suicide. For the rest of its history, humanity, its civilizations, and all other life on Earth are threatened with the specter of nuclear holocaust conceived by itself. It is not easy to believe we can so quickly sweep away what it has taken millennia to construct. To encapsulate humanity's course through history, thought should be given to the oscillation of time whirling the planet on a swing around a star. Time seems to our short lives a linear presence in a round universe, much as the near horizon seems flat on a large globe. Time cannot be held even as long as a breath. Our corroding hearts keep our time for us, ticking each hemosecond that perfuses into yesterday. Each day is a marching foot stamping the ground. Humanity persistently pushes at the edge of evolution, incessantly, impatiently, and recklessly remaking the natural world into its own image. Homo sapiens races through spectrums of time that we calculate and measure but little understand, propelled into every moment with impatience and ambition, overturning nature as well as our own history as part of ecological evolution, regarding each as irrelevant, and perhaps the only consistency to our history is our disdain for nature, regarding the natural world in which we have spent most of our history as an adversary to be overcome and altered to our design. probably nothing can stop or even detour the surge of our species except extinction, either by ourselves or our inability to catch up with an ever-expanding universe. The story of humanity is a stark account of the decline of the material natural world, its abrupt descent, the direct result of human ascendancy. Human beings have wreaked immense havoc for profit and comfort. Wildlands and forests have disappeared. Oceans and sky and land despoiled and polluted with toxic chemicals and biocides. The great wild mammals vanished or were exterminated, displaced by endless incursions into their habitats to accommodate sprawling civilization, or hunted into extinction. Others domesticated into massive docile herds of food animals or fowl, or like the great apes, wolves, whales, and elephants, poached out of existence. Primary among humanity's ancient paradoxes as it evolved into the world's major predator was its internal predations between power and inequality, a schism at the source of wars immemorial. The fabrics of humanity's large themes are interwoven from billions of diverse threads, erratic underlying patterns that dissolve into every day shifting around and interweave random without any apparent distinguishable purpose as they bump everywhere into each other. It seems as though grand motifs are illusions, just billions of ordinary persons doing individually what they wish or feel obliged to do without patterns large enough to frame, swarming like protozoa in a drop of water. And every day among these swirling frenetic masses, as with every species and most likely stars also, millions of humans die everywhere on the planet. People of every color, creed, nativity, and gender. They are murdered, KIA in a war, or slaughtered in genocide, executed, hit by cars, drowned in sinking boats or crashed in airplanes, or they die from disease, starvation, heart attack, old age. Abortions or miscarriages might be counted among a day's fatalities. Yet ominous to the very near future, more living babies appear every day than dead make room for them, ever less space every day. A possibility open to dispute is that humanity will gross in at 10 billion sometime around 2050. It seems apparent that the more of us there are, the less use any of us are, not simply because of human multitudes, but also the enormous development of robotics as human replacement. And it might also be considered that the size and capacity of our planet is able to comfortably support about 2.5 billion human beings. Boiling history to the bone might be as easy as an X-ray the more it recedes into a remote past. Yet few of humanity's gigabillions will ever be remembered for very long or be recorded for more than village histories, and names that momentarily preoccupy an age will as surely ebb with the exception of a rare few whose memories evoke infinite esteem or horror. For most of humanity, the cycles of their lives are not contrived affectations or reflected surface perturbations, but from rhythms and pulses having more to do with genetics and familial heritage than with external or superficial delights and irritations. Although wars, famines, epidemics, and economic disasters impose conflicts and accelerating fluctuations upon the world's populations that are caused as much by rapidly evolving technologies as by the perpetual cupidity of politics and looming consequences of human-generated alteration of the global climate. Ironically, the very civilization agriculture created is eradicating it, ever more farmland plowed under by implacable urban sprawl, as humans have overcrowded the soil that once was so bountiful to them, whether it is domestication of grains and animals, cloning them, and perhaps eventually ourselves, for future total serenity over the entire planet. Technology is ultra-Darwinian. It spreads, it evolves, it adapts. It replicates ever more swiftly and diversely, recombines and recreates like mutant cells, adjusting to ever more immediate and altering environments. In the end, it seems to matter less who should control technology than who is able to. A core question asked incessantly and in proportion to human adaption to its mechanical dependence is whether humans have proxied their biology to machines they invented but which now robotically replicate. Or has humanity always done so, since chipping rocks and throwing large sticks at animals and each other? Homo sapiens is a singularly adaptive creature with no fixed skills, with large evolved brains, dependent for its survival individually and as a species, in manipulating rather than adjusting to its environment. Perhaps we are so far along, so adapted to our machines, that it seems incredibly naive to ask. Science is most obviously the Pied Piper of human life. The modern religion that has inexorably swept away old beliefs and upset tradition, confounding also the so-called common sense principles of causality, observation, and the long-cherished concept of a mechanistic universe. Science has advanced beyond popular grasp simultaneously to becoming humanity's most powerful influence and shaper of contemporary life. Science and its handmaiden technology have modernized civilization by continually ripping away its fabric in the kaleidoscopic surge into an incomprehensible future. This is the point at which history is declared dead, without significant meaning except as memory and nostalgia, because it is claimed to no longer have any bearing or effect on present or future. Now that we think we know the scope of the universe, God is harder to find. Our yearning for eternity is more restless and grasping than ever, so we search the cosmos for gods we lost somewhere along the trail of our hubris. And nothing is more obsolete than yesterday's visions of tomorrow. Their profuse initial projections for this century, millennium, were cheerful, high-spirited, and starry-eyed. Commercial auguries were especially blissful. Biotechnology returning humanity to Eden through the beneficent efforts of mega corporations to recreate a McDisney vision of capitalist paradise on Earth. Darker, more grim prophecies have gloomed that happy face scenario since 9/11. The near future might be the ultimate wasteland of wanton human profligacy. Worst-case scenarios envision catastrophic possibilities of utter obliteration of planet and life. The world was scheduled to end at the first millennium of our era. We are plagued with a global epidemic at the third decade of a new millennium, with identical apocalyptic scripts from old prophecies that continue to claim the end of history is imminent, with the exception we have developed the means to accomplish what ancient prophecy continues to incite. Most adult human beings alive on planet Earth now will most likely not suffer the severe ravages of worsening climate change that, if not by nuclear annihilation, will quite likely burn humanity off the planet. Perhaps consoling themselves that they will be dead before it really kicks in, yet perceiving death as the only escape is probably not a satisfactory consolation. And the prospect of each generation being aware the world will be a more dreadful place to live in for each succeeding generation is not much comfort either. Although there is a tremendous political rift in the USA about global warming, the real critical partisan divide might be between generations, the more passive elderly who will quit the planet soon, versus the young who want to reverse the probability of a harrowing future now, before it is too late. If we who are alive now do not sincerely sweat blood to mitigate this dismal trend, our climate-distressed descendants will quite likely despise us for cravenly yielding to short-term self-interest. They will probably wish an eternal hell for us to parallel their living hell on Earth. And that was something I wrote. And now, from David A. Horowitz, professor of U.S. cultural and political history at Portland State University, history and critical theory. Race and ethnicity mark one of the most important themes of U.S. history, but are not the entire story. Gender marks one of the most important themes of U.S. history, but is not the entire story. Social class marks one of the most important themes of U.S. history, but is not the entire story. The market economy marks one of the most important themes of U.S. history, but is not the entire story. Immigration marks one of the most important themes of U.S. history, but is not the entire story. Cultural diversity marks one of the most important themes of U.S. history, but is not the entire story. Social movements mark one of the most important themes of U.S. history, but are not the entire story. The democratic tradition marks one of the most important themes of U.S. history, but is not the entire story. Middle-class prosperity marks one of the most important themes of U.S. history, but is not the entire story. Overseas military activity marks one of the most important themes of U.S. history, but is not the entire story. Love of country marks one of the most important themes of U.S. history, but is not the entire story. Whatever themes historians pursue, the study of the past requires an understanding of the context in which developments occur. And that was by David A. Horowitz, professor of U.S. cultural and political history, Portland State University. And now, a poem by Howard Nemiroff, Magnitudes. Earth's wrath at our assaults is slow to come, but relentless when it does. It has to do with catastrophic change and with the limit at which one order more of magnitude will bring us to a qualitative change and disasters drastically different from those we daily have to know about. As with the speed of light, where speed itself becomes a limit and an absolute, as with the splitting of the atom and a little later of the nucleus, as with the millions rising into billions, the Piker's kind in terms of money, yes, but a million squared in terms of time and space, as the universe grew vast while the Earth, our habitat, diminished to the size of a billiard ball, both relative to the cosmos and to the numbers of ourselves, the doubling numbers the Earth could accommodate. We stand now in the place and limit of time where hardest knowledge is turning into dream and nightmares still confined in sleeping dark seem on the point of bringing into day the sweating panic that starts the sleeper up. One or another nightmare may come true, and what to do then? What in the world to do? And that was Magnitudes by Howard Nemiroff. The late Howard Nemiroff was Poet Laureate of the United States and a World War II Navy veteran. This is Michael McCusker. Dylan Hauser-Schulk is this program's engineer. In regard to the theoretical theological case of the origin of Mother Earth and Daughter Eve, the estimable Irish Archbishop Usher calculated from ancient biblical texts in 1650 AD that the world was created on October 23rd, 4004 BC, and populated with the first earthling humans known as Adam and Eve on October 28th, a full working week later. The serpent in our garden is the pernicious and willful ignorance of the stubbornly unvaccinated against the COVID contagion, who are not surprisingly the greater number of mortal casualties. It is not their personal risks that verge on the insidious. It is what might be considered premeditated lack of concern for contamination of others that verge on reprehensible behavior. also protect others as well as yourselves by vaccinating if you haven't already, and continue to bunker down and mask up until this dreadful pandemic world war finally runs its course and we can all hug each other again.